Now, let me go to my third example, and we might be diving into a little bit of a hornet's nest here. But in Sunday school class, a child says, "Daddy hit me yesterday." And of course, today's environment, there's people who feel that spanking should be outlawed completely. And of course, there's many that feel that done judiciously and in a controlled way, that it's something certainly that would be biblically founded. And but there's, Christians as well that would say, no, there's better ways of disciplining than corporal punishment. But here you are, you're faced with this, "Daddy hit me." Where do you go with that? Because that can really raise a lot of flags and concerns. If there's abuse, you certainly don't want to allow that to happen. But could the child be lying? The typical elder may not have any kind of training on how to try to unravel that and make a discernment that would be appropriate. What would your advice be in that situation?
Boy, Chuck, another great question. And I can tell you that I've had experience personally with both of those outcomes where one, the child was being just straight up lying and had an agenda or a motive, whether it was I didn't get ice cream last night or I really just don't like, my dad, my aunt, my uncle, whomever it is, and I want to see them go down because they know this. The kids know that making the mere allegation oftentimes is enough to bring devastation to that individual. So I've seen that side, and then I've also seen the side of no, you know what? They were afraid to come forward because they knew nothing was going to be done. And they didn't even want to, we call it mobilizing law enforcement or mobilizing the help model because they didn't want to bring embarrassment and truly. Bad things were happening. So knowing that, I can tell you that again, going to go back to that concept of being a good witness and a good documenter. So the person who is the recipient of this initial allegation really is going to play a key role in the outcome and how this works. Again, observations. Is there any evidence? Redness, bruising, behaviors changed, when they say, "Hey, he choked me out and I stopped breathing and this happened 2 hours ago," and then you look and you see no redness. Or you look and you see redness and they're saying, "No, he didn't touch me in the neck." So again, that one-on-one witness is just really going to play a huge role in figuring out this. Now, I would suggest strongly that you don't put the burden on that person to make the decision on whether they report or don't. And I'm going to draw an analogy to healthcare professionals where they have mandatory reporting laws that if an allegation comes in, the reason they did it is better safe than sorry. We'd rather run the risk of embarrassing the recipient of the allegation than we would not acting or failing to act on a crime of violence. So I think mandatory reporting is huge. And then again, mobilizing law enforcement and getting them in involved as soon as possible. Now, if this isn't a situation where you know that the child is safe at this moment, maybe you all have taken them back to a safe room or an area where leadership is hanging out. There's no emergency situation where you need to call 911. That would be another great opportunity to get a hold of that command level officer and bring the fact pattern to him or her and say, "Hey, here's everything that we have. This is some of the observations that we've seen. Now, would you all please come in and take this off of, our responsibility or take the burden away from us?" I think that's going to be huge and probably the most the best way to allow the experts to really dive into is this truth or is it a some sort of malicious accusation?
Yeah, let me ask you this, and this might vary from state to state, but is there, I don't know about Arizona, but in New York State where I am, in teachers are required to report suspicions of abuse. What about church leaders? Is that a requirement in states or many states that you're aware of?
You know, it really is gonna it is gonna vary, and it's gonna depend on, you know, is there a city code, is there a state law, is there a federal law? I would feel more comfortable encouraging the church leaders or the viewers or listeners of this interview to meet with the local law enforcement, and knowledge is power in this situation. To know better, to know the exact answer than for me to even lead you down a generally. Again, I can tell you that most of the time it's going to be, you're going to find in laws that there is a mandatory reporting. You know, and I think what's important to remember for all of us who are reacting to something that someone else made a conscious effort to do, whether it is truth, or not, we didn't create the situation. We have no malice. We're merely responding or reacting to an allegation made. So I know that we oftentimes get so focused on, well, I don't want John, you know, to have this stigma follow him, you know, forever because of my. No, it's not because of what we have done or the church leadership has done. It's important to remember that, because I think that psychologically eases us away from, I didn't start this. I'm not out there saying, slandering, defaming, or doing anything like that. I'm responding to this with the little to no training that I have, and I've shuffled it over to the appropriate authorities.
Do you have any recommendations of material or books on the subject that we could be able to recommend to others?
Well, you know, I don't have any specifically that I'm aware of with regards to how the church should respond to this. You know, however, I did mention earlier Lieutenant Colonel Grossman, and he is really one of the most, if not the most, respected authority on this whole issue of violence and how did society even get to this point, and how they're desensitized, and then how do we respond to this, and then some of the safeguards that can be put into place. So, you know, if you're listening to this, Google Lieutenant Colonel Grossman, and you'll see five or six books that he's written. And I would really strongly suggest diving into those. If nothing else, they're great reads and they're fun to read. But more importantly, there are just some nuggets of information in there and some insight that he has that I think is really valuable. You know, specifically, Chuck, one of the biggest things that we kind of touched on but glanced over are. We call them active shooter scenarios. And this is where a suspect or suspects come in with the intention of literally killing as many people as they can. And oftentimes we find in law enforcement the environment or the culture or the target, the church in this example, doesn't know what to tell their members. What do you do? Do you run? Do you throw rocks at them? Do you tackle them? Do you hide? Do you make noise? So I want to pass on something that we've passed on to the schools, and it's a very simple saying: run, hide, and fight. And in those orders, what we suggest, if you're hearing or seeing it and you're not equipped to take care of the situation or the threat, run, get out of there. That's always the best option. If running isn't an option, you're trapped. Then simply hide. Get, you know, cover or conceal yourself the best you can and be quiet. And then the last option, you're face to face with the suspect, and you have nothing else to do but fight for your life. And so I think taking that concept and making sure that the church knows this, and this is going to be an interesting evolution for the churches and how they address this issue, because typically it was, we're just not going to talk about that. It's not going to happen here. This is church. We're going to hope nothing happens. I think that's a foolish decision simply because we don't know when or if it's going to happen. But educating, and I think back to when we were kids growing up, the fire drill or the duck and cover, things that the school system made us do and talked about it. So rather than ignoring it and hoping that it doesn't come, they took a proactive approach and said, no, we're going to talk about how do you evacuate? Because I can tell you this, in an active shooter situation, it is chaos, absolute chaos. And that's where it's going to become important for the church to have command structure set up, to have, you know, what do we do? Do we have radios, the ability to communicate? I can tell you more likely than not, the cell phone towers are going to be completely overwhelmed and shut down because everyone's going to be using it. So now how does your church leadership communicate with each other? Simple solution, get some two-way radios. And this is where investing in a nice radio as opposed to the $8.99 walkie-talkie at Walmart is going to come in. So, just making sure that people have designated responsibilities and can try to lead and then communicate effectively with law enforcement is really huge, because law enforcement is going to respond to an active shooter situation, guns out, rifles out, and they are not going to talk, meet, share stories, or listen to anything. Because at this point, it's a cat and mouse game. And they are going to go on a, where do I hear the sounds coming from? I need to stop the threat. So those active shooter scenarios and the potential for those, as we've seen in society, that it's just growing and growing and growing, making sure that the church is set up for, telling the members of the church what to do. I would strongly suggest taking time, maybe once a quarter, every 6 months, and addressing it, to all of the members at a service and saying, hey, here's a topic that we want to talk about and make sure that we're familiar with, run, hide, and fight, and be a good witness, and, just addressing those things so the members know what to do. And I think that comfort that they're going to have in their own mind is also very important, knowing that while our church is not only taking care of its biblical responsibilities, but is also taking care of the threats that we know exist.
Well, that's all part of leadership, is being aware of the threats. A good shepherd is always guarding the sheep, and in some regards, a good shepherd is going to know wolves very, very well, so he can guard against them. One of the things we're going to be doing in conjunction with this interview recording is we're also going to be trying to collect some examples of different churches that have come up with policies. So we'll be able to present some things out there, just some samples that people can use and modify, adapt as they see fit. But Jeff, thanks so much. This has been a great interview, and it's been very helpful. I'm sure there's going to be people that are going to have some questions, and if they come along on our website, we'll pass them on to you. So thanks a lot for your time, Jeff, and the Lord bless you and your family and your new endeavor. So Lord bless you.